one fact which I want to draw your attention to is this, that the Buddha, according to his own word, his own declaration, is simply an enlightened human being. The Buddha comes into the world just as we come into the world. He's puzzled and perplexed by the mystery of life, just as we sometimes are. And he struggles and he strives to find a solution, just as we sometimes strive and struggle to find a solution to it all, to find some light, as it were, in the midst of the darkness. But he found, he discovered, whereas we are still groping, still looking. But the point to insist upon and the point to remember is that the Buddha, even after his enlightenment, even after the consummation of his search, is an enlightened human being. The Buddha did not claim to be God. The Buddha didn't claim to be an incarnation of God or son of God. Didn't claim to be someone sent by God, a prophet of God, or a messenger of God. He claims to be no more than a simple human being who by his own human efforts had realized the truth, and then after realizing it, proclaimed it to other human beings so that they might realize it by their own efforts for themselves. So this is the most important thing that we have to realize about the Buddha. In Hinduism, Krishna and Rama claim to be incarnations of God, or it's claimed on their behalf by their followers. Christ is believed to be the Son of God. Muhammad is believed to be the messenger of God. The Jewish prophets are believed to be prophets sent by God, or inspired by God. But the Buddha, perhaps alone among the founders of the great religions, doesn't make any such claim. The Buddha simply says, I am a human being who by my own human efforts have realized the truth, become an enlightened human being. So this, as I have said, is the first thing that we have to understand about the Buddha. Not, of course, that the Buddha is just an ordinary ethical teacher like Socrates or Marcus Aurelius. In the eyes of the Buddhists, one who has realized the truth, one who is enlightened, is the highest of all beings. And in the universe, there is no being higher than an enlightened human being. This is another fact which we have to understand. Now, a question which might arise in your minds, I know it arose in the minds of the other students who came here earlier, a question which might arise in your minds is, well, if the Buddha himself is not God, or incarnation of God, or son of God, or messenger of God, or prophet of God, well, what is his relationship to God? What sort of relationship is there between God on the one hand and the Buddha on the other? What is the place of God in Buddhism? This is the sort of question which very naturally will spring to people's minds in this country. Now the answer is an answer which may perhaps surprise you. It might even shock you. I remember last time I spoke, when we came to this part of the talk, there were one or two little gasps from some of the young ladies in the audience. Because the answer is that in Buddhism, there's no place for God at all. Buddhism is one of those religions which we call non-theistic. Now this might come as news to you. You might be under the impression, you might have made the assumption, that religion is necessarily, automatically, by very definition as it were, theistic. That is, involving belief in a personal God, a supreme being. If you look up the word in the dictionary, what will the dictionary tell you? Religion means a system of belief in and worship of God, the supreme being. But the dictionary definition overlooks a very important fact. And that fact is that in the world, religions are of many kinds. We may say that especially, religions are of two kinds. If we look over the world, if we examine all the religions of the world, especially the greater ones, those with the most followers, the historic religions, we'll find that very broadly speaking, they fall into two great groups. On the one hand, we have the theistic religions. On the other hand, the non-theistic religions. Now, what are the theistic religions? First of all, of course, Christianity itself, then Islam, and then Judaism, and some forms of popular Hinduism. These are all theistic. They all believe in one God who is the creator of the universe, who rules the universe, who is the father, as it were, of all mankind. Now, on the other hand, you've got the non-theistic religions, that is, Taoism and Confucianism in China, philosophical Hinduism, Jainism, another religion originating in India about 500 BC, and also, of course, Buddhism, as well as the more philosophical forms of Hinduism. So all these faiths are non-theistic. They don't believe in a god, they don't believe in a supreme being, a creator of the universe, at all. Now, this fact alone, or the realization of this fact alone, should serve to open our eyes a little, should serve to make our outlook broader. Because usually people think that religion involves necessarily belief in God. We usually think if someone believes in God, they're religious. If they don't believe in God, they're not religious. This is our simple equation. But really it isn't so. For the last so many thousands of years in the world, there have been hundreds of millions of people altogether who have led meaningful religious and spiritual lives, made spiritual progress, even gained enlightenment perhaps, without resort to this conception of a personal God. So if our study of comparative religion, if our study even of Buddhism alone, awakens us to this fact, this alone is of some value. Because instead of thinking that religion was invariably theistic, we've come to understand there can be such a thing as non-theistic religion also. Now, a few minutes ago I spoke about the Bishop of Woolwich. Why is it that his book, Honest to God, has made such an impact? Why is it that it has pleased some people and outraged and shocked others? Because he says simply, God must go. He says the idea of God as a personal being somewhere up in the heavens, this old sort of image, the image of God as a sort of heavenly father, this is out of date, he says. We've got to think of religion in other terms, and he starts trying to define what used to be called God in terms of the ground of our being, and in similar, rather abstruse ways. Perhaps we don't realize quite the extent to which we've grown out of this sort of idea of God as a heavenly father. Only a couple of weeks ago, I had a little time to spare, so I looked in at the National Gallery. I don't know how many of you have ever been there, perhaps you have been sometimes as a group, but I was especially interested in the early Italian paintings. And as I went round, I couldn't help noticing how often God the Father was depicted. Christ, of course, one expects to be depicted, the Virgin Mother also. But in many of the paintings, one saw a representation of God the Father. And there he was, usually depicted as an old man, with a crown and a long white beard and a beautiful purple robe. And that's how people used to think. And perhaps we don't altogether realize how far we've outgrown this way of thinking. We perpetuate the language. We say, oh, our Father which art in heaven. And we don't stop to think what we really mean by that. What we mean by God, or what we mean by God being in heaven. If you can be in heaven, obviously heaven is a place. But where is that place? We just don't stop to think. We just repeat the words without thinking, without reflecting. So people like the Bishop of Woolwich have started thinking. And he's come to the conclusion that the traditional phraseology doesn't really mean anything today. It makes no appeal whatever to modern men and women. Those who are really modern, that is, not those who are just born in the 20th century, but mentally living in the Middle Ages. So he suggests, drop it. Don't talk about God the Father. Don't talk about heaven. Don't talk about going to heaven when you die. Don't talk about the beating wings of angels and things like that. That's all out of date, he said. Think and speak in terms of psychology, if you like, but not in these terms. Get rid of God. This is what he calls being honest to God. Recognize that God is dead, in fact. So better to bury him. So this is why his book has attracted so much attention. So I feel that the Bishop of Woolwich is approaching, and I told him this in fact, the Buddhist position. Religion without God. Now this might seem revolutionary to some people. For the Buddhists, of course, it's old hat, as we may say. Religion without God, we've had it for 2,500 years. But this is one of the reasons why I felt that the Bishop of Woolwich was quite close to ourselves. Because he seems to be feeling his way towards a form of religion, even a form of Christianity, without God.